interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate-changed, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 556. Remember, behaviorally controlled. They know you better than yourself. So remember, being free is not a spectator sport. Get you behind the woodshed. Figure out what it is you need to do and focus in on that, the simple form. Don't make a big deal about something that's really simple. And we have a proof for what I've been saying about this. When you can find it, you don't have to go, a lot of people used to be on and on and on about how to prove a thing. Really, in the law, the implementation of the governments in the law have to follow the black and white. And that's where we would start. Here we have the court case that challenged a bunch of laws. It was under one law, typically called an omnibus act. And there's a lot of things involved, and yet the Constitution may not allow it. Here we have Missouri Supreme Court strikes down law against homelessness COVID vaccine mandates. The Missouri Supreme Court on Tuesday struck down a law that threatened homeless people with jail time for sleeping on state land. Judges ruled unanimously to toss the law for violating the section of the Missouri Constitution that prohibits legislation from containing multiple unrelated subjects. In this case, the sweeping 64-page bill also dealt with city and county governance and banned COVID-19 vaccine requirements for public workers in Missouri. Judges ruled that the law is invalid in its entirety. Judge Paul Wilson wrote in the court's decision, and look at this very carefully, in its entirety. It wasn't just one provision they started out with. The whole bill gets swept out. And just because of this constitutional protection, just to get off a bit here, just talk about that. It's really important to be able to only have one subject matter bills. And part of that, you'll see some states will say that the law is supposed to be interpreted by the common man, and yet we see legalese thrown in. I haven't heard anybody really attacking the laws from that standpoint. Likely it wouldn't be the lawyers, the legals won't let that happen, but that's still the truth. This is one of those concepts. The bill should only have one subject matter. And so when someone reads it, they can get the idea. They don't have to burn their brain like we see the federal government doing as well all the time. These are really dangerous. And so this was challenged. And again, it took a challenge. The law was not invalidated on its face. It's presumed to be lawful, even though it directly violated the Constitution. And this is the weakness. I don't care where we go. It's the weakness in this government. Lawless laws play out until someone successfully challenges them. In an amicus brief, listen carefully here, in an amicus brief, a friend of a court, advocates for homeless people argued that the lawmakers, quote, blamed mental health and substance abuse for causing homelessness, but ignored the real problem is affordable housing and offered no real mental health or substance abuse solutions in the bill. Went on, and in the process, they tried to justify criminalizing homelessness as a method of improving outcomes for homeless individuals. Attorneys for organizations, including the National Coalition for the Homeless, wrote. You know, understand, this is an attorney now. This is not just some guy on the street thinking he knows something. It's supposed to be the attorneys that know how to argue before a court about what's up. Listen very carefully. They argued this, and the court comes back with an interesting response, right on point. And this is why I think this issue is so important. The report goes on here. The state lawmakers had added the homeless provision along with 49 other new sections to the legislation in an attempt to pass the bills that otherwise were too far behind in the process to advance before the end of a session deadline in 2022. Supreme Court judges ruled that against the Missouri law without discussing the potential impact of the homelessness policy, instead focusing on whether the issue fits under the bill's subject political subdivision. So here the attorneys argued all about the homeless, and the court came back simply to say, we're looking at this from the constitutional provision, and the bill title says political subdivisions. This is a simple case of Missouri. The omnibus bill here violated the constitutional prohibition against multiple subject matter bills. but notice the attorneys wax eloquent here upon matters irrelevant to the issue of law. This is what I ask you not to do for yourself in protection of yourself. Look at the core issue of where the law was violated and stick to that. A lot of times I'll find a core issue. I may find a couple of other issues that are maybe not quite as powerful, and I may attach those, but that's about the limit that I'd want to go into. If you go too far, and all of a sudden the other side can take it and run with it, and they usually do. Here, the bar-ass members will promote this whole nonsense. Since 2022, an unconstitutional bill went through with all these subject matters, and it was being enforced, attempting to be enforced, is the really not the best we can do. They'll say it's the best we can do, this whole thing. Yeah, so this is not a good look for the bar members or legislators trying to cram things together instead of thoughtful deliberation, which I understood was the way it was supposed to go down. And then you look and see, when you read through the article, you look and see what a mess the delay caused this to be declared unconstitutional, when certainly on its face. You didn't need to be a genius to figure out there was more than one subject matter unrelated to political subdivisions. So even though when you heard that they had the proper protection against mandatory vaccines, that's also struck down due to legislative haste. And despite, as a matter of law, there is no COVID-19 vaccines, remember, the legislature and courts have gotten it wrong all this time as well. The misery communicable disease law would protect against mandatory vaccination if one insists on the due process provided, as I've been explaining for years now, on this. But yeah, it's the best the bar can do is a real mess here. As we watch, they want to exalt themselves. And, you know, you start looking at these judges, they're just lawyers. They're not any exalted brain. They're a lawyer that decided they wanted to go into politics. They ran for an office, and now they're a judge. And how many times have I seen them wrong and corruption? It's just fascinating how much corruption people will allow, partly because you don't keep it simple. And when you do, that's how you know when you're up against a corruption. When you make you see a simple facial wrong from the black and white, and they will not rule on that correctly, or they do not extend what the legislature said, and do not give a good reason why it's not constitutionally invalid to do that, you know you're dealing in a corrupt system. Again, the David Tullis case out in Tennessee, absolutely, it was straight up, easy to see. There was dereliction of duty, and I could tell within the first few weeks when they didn't answer, the courts didn't answer to the points. They didn't answer at all. I realized that this was a corrupt court system, and David Tullis' case is an example of making a record of how that works out. You can watch and go through all the evidence of how the Bar Association was going to continue to promote this attack against us at warp speed. There was nothing they were going to listen to. No equity principle whatsoever here. So this is this problem. It sits not just in the federal, but this sits more importantly in the local judge and jurisdiction. This is why I intimated last week referring to the 10th Amendment state power. You want to focus in on the local, the 10th Amendment power. As I've shown you, we've done in past things like, let's say, national wildfire policy, as we found the ultimate authority for the decisions underneath that were actually your local jurisdiction. But this 10th Amendment state power, focusing on the local, you're going to run into the same big mess to clean up there. So it's not just, I don't just say here, oh, let's do a 10th Amendment organization and move in. No, there's a whole lot of mess going on. And I don't know what more to say. It's there. It's ruling our lives. It's ruining our lives. And so we have to, we either decide that we're going to allow it to ruin our lives and get stuck, or we're going to start standing up where we can. And in this case, if you do what I'm suggesting, you don't have to be championing these things. But when you see a problem in it, certainly when it affects you, don't take it lying down, if you will. And so relative to the feds, this entire bar judicial thing is a usurpacious occupation, and it helps drive the local problems as well. But it's easier on the 10th Amendment side because the power is there as well on certain non-federal issues, on most other non-federal issues, that problem is closer to you. And if you go from state to local, which is usually your county, you have an ability to address a lot of that, and necessarily we need to. As you're seeing, this was a state decision. Luckily, they caught it, and it was simple. So keep it simple. There's only supposed to be one subject matter on a bill. If you find those bills and you find out there's lots of subject matters in bills, start flexing your muscles with those simple cases for yourself, because I don't think it gets easier going out of this. They're you're seeing these laws. I've been pointing them out for a decade or so as by broadcasting or more. You're seeing laws that sit on the books, Roe versus Wade, the decision against that, the Dodd decision. They sat there with that for, 50, 60 years. That's one of the major problems, that we'll be living under unlawful laws, and certainly not all of them are caught, because the judiciary, the Bar Association, this is the best we can do to act like molasses in February. Again, that's just another way to defeat people. And people are going to have to come together and figure that out. We're going to have to figure out how that's not right. I don't care what their excuse is. It still becomes a trust breach to the presentation of lawful things. Again, allowing unlawful things to go is an accessory. And here we have another thing that may have gotten a little, didn't get away. I thought it did. I reported that it did. The report was that it did, but apparently the FISA extension was put on a short leash before the NDAA was passed this last week or so. Still time here for you folks that are interested in this, and some of you I hope will be, to impress those Congress creators to let this section 702 pass quietly into the night. Apparently there's an issue that came up, and there was a big infighting amongst the Republicans and the GOP side. Good. I don't care who does it, as long as I get the noise up. And so there's a cache of critters there that were making enough noise, and the new speaker pulled this bills, and then they passed. Congress has approved a short-term extension of the nation's warrantless surveillance power, punting to the new year a decision over how to reform the law. Now, that was disappointing. We want it just to go quietly in the night. We don't want it reformed. We want it to disappear. Included in the defense policy bill headed to the president's desk after approval by the House on Thursday is a measure that extends Section 02 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA, until mid-April. FISA allows the government to spy on foreigners located abroad, but Americans who communicate with those being surveilled have their information swept up in these searches, prompting agreement that reauthorization of the powers must come with the reforms that limit documented abuse of the tool by the FBI. While the National Defense Authorization Act's inclusion of FISA avoids an end-of-the-year expiration of powers, it also extends an ongoing battle over whether the government should get a warrant before reviewing information it's already collected pertaining to Americans. And several conservative lawmakers voiced frustration over its inclusion in a must-pass bill. Well, that's all politics. The point is that they want to reform it. Why is that a question? Again, you don't have multiple bills in multiple subject matters in one bill. Why do they have here this provision where there would be a question that you didn't need a warrant? Is the problem in this country? There should be no question that there needed to have a warrant. So, reform? I don't know. Just let it sweep. It's going to take some pressure. Apparently, this verbal pressure actually has some force and effect. Now, we've seen it in the past. We're not getting much pushback. We're getting a lot of people that wallow in the sensationalism of all this and then shrug their shoulders. But we have an organized groups going in, properly so. This isn't a force and effect. And I said the black and white is how you prove that out, and you show it's not an opinion at that point. Everyone can argue an opinion. You can't argue when the law says a certain thing and it's lawful, not unlawful, not unconstitutional, or that there's a provision, an underlying obligation that the government has. So very important stuff in the legislations that are going through. A lot of these things go through. I watched it in JMD. They go through. They look totally unconstitutional, but unless you have the wherewithal and a group of people to go fight it, then you're up against the Bar Association, that whose lawyers lobbied to get that stuff in, coming from law schools, no less, all Bar Association organized. That becomes a very big problem. There has to be a whole lot more force and effect on pushing back on that systemic corruption within the organization if the association itself isn't enough corruption to kick out completely. As I said, the Bar Association came in around 1953, and they exchanged the Permanent Laws of the People for a Model Business Corporation Act. And no one said anything about it. You're going to go to them, the occupier, and say, hey, you did an unlawful act? They're not going to agree to that. And this is the same problem that we have with any other thing that you see looks like to be a right. Well, I'll call it the right to drive, but it's not. People don't call it the right to travel, even. And that's just ignored. And most people don't have a clue about how to address that or to figure out a way to stop the decision-maker. As I've said, there's at least one state I know that directly states that the rights apparent to a patent are not within jurisdiction of a judge of the state. They're not within the jurisdiction of a code enforcement hearings officer either. And there's your protection if you only knew that it was there. The savings clauses, as I pointed out. So that's enough on the law here. We're going to move on from also from last week. Interesting, the organoids. There was so much more to talk about that I didn't get to. I'm going to bring that tab back up, and we can talk about the Living Brain Tissue Powers Breakthrough Cyber Neural Network. They called it Brainware, Organeural, as I coined the phrase here just to put it in the tags. And very interesting stem cell-created organids. They are not really life, but because they don't have a full life process, but they go through. Following that last story, there was a couple more stories coming along. And on the heels of that story, what I didn't get to more definitely was that man and woman is trying to make a synthetic brain. The organoid was an interesting middle ground using stem cells. And then the next week it came out that they have synthesized this Australia researchers have synthesized the brain. But now we look at the size and the capacity, the efficiency of the brain. And here we have at one point in the prior article about the organoid brainware was the computing power. They really don't talk about it. Our brains use about 20 watts a day of power. And the closest that we can get to mimic that is a giant computer that is said to be able to mimic the brain's functions. This is a cutting-edge neuromorphic system that can execute an impressive 228 trillion operations per second, distinguishing itself with its unique design, superior efficiency, and wide range of potential uses. What I found fascinating, they keep talking about the efficiency. When you look at the system and the picture of the system, and I only found a few pictures, and you look at the cooling ducting that comes out of the top of the cabinet, and this cabinet system must be about 20 feet long, you realize that they're talking about hundreds of thousands of watts going through this thing, and here your brain does all the stuff it does. But they're talking about, this is an impressive 228 trillion operations per second, distinguishing itself with its unique design, superior efficiency, and wide range of potential uses. Researchers at the International Center for Neuromorphic Systems at Western Sydney University have announced the world's first supercomputer, Deep South, capable of emulating networks on the scale of the human brain, using about 1 million cores consisting of field programmable gate array chips. These are much more efficient, they say, but when you see the size of those ventilating ducts, you'll realize, and there's like 10 racks of these things to make this computer, you'll realize this is not 20 watts. This thing mimicking even only 228 trillion a second is not quite brain speed either, but it's already using up, the power from a hydro dam, if you will. This supercomputer uses a unique neuromorphic system working like our brains do. It is swiftly carrying out 220 trillion operations per second, about as quickly as the human brain. But when, again, it's about as quickly, but it's really not when they get to it. And then you have all these other problems that digital can't keep up with that our brains do. But here, the development of Deep South is a joint project involving universities of Sydney and Melbourne in Australia, as well as Aachen in Germany. They aim to advance smart device technology significantly, improving mobile phones, industrial and agricultural sensors, and AI applications to be smarter and more energy efficient. More energy efficient, they say. It will also provide valuable insights into the functioning of the human brain under normal and pathological conditions. So, they say it's going to be smart applications and AI. It's a mimicking a brain to be AI. Pretty interesting, artificial intelligence that they're trying to mimic, and they can't get the energy efficiency down. Now, these chips are pretty interesting. These are the ones I told you about that were just coming on the scene when I was into R&D, and they really were a step up. In fact, I think the new fastest Apple chips are using this architecture. This is how they get it more efficient, using this chip from a long time ago. This is not even really new technology. So it's kind of interesting they're also using 30, 40-year-old technology, just now getting to the point where they can put it and apply it in a way I said that they could. I was excited to hear this technology, but it was so far in the in the future that we would be seeing it, that it was, okay, nothing more for me to see there. And here we are, though, and they've got it all tuned up now, but you look at how big this thing is. It may be efficient compared to vacuum tubes, if you will, the correlation, but it's not efficient to how our brain. But I'd like to remind all our, they talk about smart appliances and all this. I'd like to remind my listener that smart isn't necessarily intelligent. And notice here that they aren't going to task the thing with bringing out a peace on Earth, but more the tech of technological enslavement, it seemed, as you see the list, while trying to get better insights on mental pathological conditions, is probably likely to try to use those against us in executing the sustainable future that they want, the pathological criminals that they are. Here, the point here of all this is presenting this article is to highlight that for whatever energy savings is being advanced, massive energy consumptions for this brain of computerized brain simulated systems compared to the brain of a natural brain. And here the importance of using the stem cell derived organoid, which is much more efficient, like more like a brain. It's a stem cell. And that's the big importance from the story last week, really, or this one I have now. I brought back the living tissue brain and the neural brainware, the brainware that they're making. This could be a big jump in that. And given here, the problem, again, these companies, given like Google abandoning the doing no evil, as I talked last week as well, will co-opt or hijack these systems, having more efficient ways that are able to hijack the natural brain systems, utilizing natural systems that they hybridize. So this is, again, the science fiction coming alive right as we watch. But we're not going to carry this computer around, I can tell you, as a mimicking artificial intelligence. I don't care if it beats or surpasses the brain. So, and then the other thing I found interesting in the name Deep South, and I'm wondering and supposing whether Deep South will come with the university system prejudices that are built into all these things anymore. And so again, it's coming out. AI is almost entirely. In fact, it's a sought right now to make what they call based AI. Everything coming out of AI has this progressive liberal bent to it. There's no way to seemingly get away from that. And a part of that is the databases that are being found. The databases are since just recently, the last 10 years, or those that are being maintained are all have the, if you will, woke condition, this smart adaptation to knowledge, and it's fallen. It's a fiction. It's a fraud. And so that's why I believe it tends to do that. It's garbage in, garbage out, essentially. As I've told you, we have to be careful on all this AI. Can we make really, really good tools focused on something, but this general application, be real careful, because you see, they are going to use this for advanced AI. Pretty soon, that's going to be real hard to tell the difference. No different than an AI-generated picture anymore is very difficult to tell that it's false. And I'm looking again, I looked at a whole batch of pictures. They are very difficult. I'm finding they're still having trouble with certain aspects of realism in certain parts of the body, and so you can start looking for that still, but very difficult. But here we go, keep moving on. These organoids are making the news right now. They're coming forward. They're trying to mimic the biology. They are biology. They're hybrid, the hybrid crossover that a man has figured out here. Tiny living robots made from human cells surprise scientists. This is the biological experiments that are going on. But we always see that it's these things, all this stuff that the man touches surprise us, which I find terrifying. I find it exciting, but someone wants to turn around and put it in application. And they don't, as we see, trust the science, safe and effective. And it may not be very, very quickly. Trust the law, right? No, it's unconstitutional, but we have to wait for a year or a half in order to get that determined. It should have never come out unlawful, ever. Here, tiny living robots made from human cells surprise scientists. Scientists have created tiny living robots from human cells that can move around in a lab dish and may one day be able to help heal wounds or damaged tissue, according to the new study. A team at Tufts University and Harvard University's Weiss Institute has dubbed these creations Anthrobots, I guess I'll do it that way. The research builds on an earlier work from some of the same scientists who made the first living robots, or xenobots, from stem cells sourced from embryos of the African clawed frog, Xenopus laevis. Some people thought that the features of the Xenobots relied a lot on the fact that they are embryonic and amphibian, says the study author Michael Levin, Vannevar Bush professor of biology at Tufts School of Arts and Sciences. Quote, I don't think this has anything to do with any embryo. This has nothing to do with being a frog. I think this has much more general property of living things. We don't realize all the competencies that our own body cells have. Boy, if Covey Swindle didn't tell you that when we started looking into the cell and what the cell does and how they've hijacked that thing, the software of life, the zipper, the hybrid DNA, hybrid RNA. You see, hybridization is important here. We missed a whole lot of things about the competency of our body cells that we don't think about it. Going on here while alive, the anthrobots, but were not full-fledged organisms because they didn't have a full life cycle. These are nothing more than organoids, these stem cell constructions. The scientists used adult human cells from a trachea and a windpipe from anonymous donors of different ages and sexes. Researchers zeroed in on this type of cell because they were relatively easy to access due to work on COVID-19 and lung disease, and more importantly, because of the feature that scientists believed would make the cells capable of motion, said the study co-author Gizem Gamuskaya, a doctoral student at Tufts. Gamuskaya experimented with the chemical composition of tracheal cells' growth conditions and found a way to encourage the cilia to face outward and on the organoids. Once she found the right matrix, the organoids became mobile after a few days with the cilia acting like little oars. It's this self-assembly that makes them unique. They were surprised to see the anthrobots encouraged growth to the damaged region of the neurons, although the researchers don't yet understand the healing mechanism, the study noted. Let me point out that little connection to the neurons. This is what they're all looking for. This is why the first story, was interesting about the brainware. They're making that hybridization crossover to get them, the technocrat, to get the hookup for us. Like we're that dragonfly I told you about years and years ago, that report. Quote, it reminds us that these harsh binary categories that we've operated with, is that a robot? Is that an animal? Is that a machine? These kinds of things don't serve us very well. We need to get beyond that. Yes, it's a whole other philosophy right there, talking right there. So it's pretty interesting. Fascinating technology here. I really think it's cool. However, we watch the way it goes. You see that list that the mimicking supercomputer is going to do for our brain is totally technocratically focused, absolutely focused on that. No, don't work on world peace. No, work on how to make things more smart, S-M-A-R-T smart, not smart like we would think the brain is. Someone's response through their brain to their reality. You know, it's the dysfunction of reality that they're causing. But so these are the organoids are among us, folks. That is now in the news. They're undead. They don't have a complete life cycle, but they are working with a life in a life force. And we're messing with things we don't understand. You heard it right here again and again. These trust the science play, folks. The future, you also see they came through the COVID-19. So the future programmers, these future tiny robots, these programmers, we got a little clue that those might be involved already in the jab if those Spanish micrographs were correct. If these future programs could be added to the jabs, the software for life, as they suggest here, as they self-construct what they want to do, and they can be programmed, as we're going to see. So you want to, I guess we can ask, maybe ask the question, booster anyone? See how they can build keep adding these booster shots, have different components. I talked about all this before, but now here's the science that may actually pull it all together. And I don't think it's too far-fetched an idea why I'm talking about it. It's fascinating stuff, but why do they always go to the side that doesn't, the dark side? Why aren't they having this this supercomputer work as a brain to solve the, you know, the war in the world. Why not strive for peace? No, no, they're going to make more war. They're going to make you against someone who wants to make profit from you in the sense of a technocrat, some bureaucrat, bringing you into the fold through technology. DNA nanobots can exponentially self-replicate. So we have the self-assembly, and then we have this, the nanobots exponentially self-replicate. Didn't sound much different than the RNA-DNA hybrid that was put in the COVID jab. So again, it's right here if we would see it. But these are one step beyond into things more of an application. Constructor machines here, tiny machines made from strands of DNA can build copies of themselves, leading to an exponential replication. The similar devices could one day be used to create drugs inside the body. They've always had this promise as well, but remember, given that they're true, they've got tissue, these substances being grown into cells, into your blood vessels, and they keep replicating. How do you think that stuff gets better? It's there unless there's something already replicating. I think this technology is actually working. It's just not working like we would think a machine building something quite yet. So that's what I think the 1940s goal would be, but we're not going to be there even close quite yet. Right now they're just killing people. And even so, what was there, a Fantastic Voyage, wasn't it? There was a movie a long time ago just about people going, getting shrunk down and getting in and do, well, these are going to be already, they're not going to be people. They're going to be these DNA robots. Very interesting. They replicate themselves, and they can be harnessed to manufacture drugs. Drugs. Don't just go in and fix something. No, don't make drugs. But anyway, this isn't something that they say here that's taking over the world just yet, says Sermon, and that's not a bad thing. And just yet, folks, that was interesting little addition that I think you need to pay attention to. Here, the idea of self-replicating machines running out of control and turning all matter, including us, into copies of themselves with exponential haste, known as the gray goo scenario, has been a trope of science fiction since the scenario was dreamed up almost 40 years ago in the book by Kim Eric Dexler. Handy agrees that this process is unlikely to run away uncontrolled, but says that it is not entirely without risk. The trouble is we don't know everything that we perhaps ought to know about protein folding and 3D structures in cells. There could be something that we miss. So there's always the kind of uncertainty. You think you can build safeguards in, but they're not necessarily a guarantee that it will be safe, he says. Safe and effective, folks. Safe and effective. Where'd we hear that? There's always the kind of uncertainty. There's always the kind of uncertainty. You think you can build safeguards in, but they're not necessarily a guarantee that it will be safe, he says. Trust the science, folks. That's all I gotta say. And then there are these are programmed in your body, and what these things that can do, be programmed in your body, what they can do. There's now evidence of what other things get in your body can do. And it's just a hack fest. It's just fascinating, but it's a hack fest. And again, they already told us AI is a black box. They don't know anyway. So keep trusting the science on all this. I still think it's fascinating stuff, but not inside my body. We need to keep that distance, I think. Here we're getting evidence that your systems can be hacked by AI itself. Chatbots can jailbreak other chatbots. Now, AI chatbots can convince other chatbots to instruct users on how to build bombs and cook meth. Today's artificial intelligence chatbots have built-in restrictions to keep them from providing users with dangerous information, but a new preprint study shows that how to get AIs to trick each other into giving up those secrets. Modern chatbots, they're just coming out, modern chatbots, have the power to adopt personas by feigning special personalities or acting like fictional characters. Now, understand what they're doing with these chatbots, how they're developed, what they start from. It's very interesting what these things are. You want to put yourself at the mercy of one of these personalities? Talk about persons. Here they are, in AI in digital form. The new study took advantage of the ability by asking a particular AI chatbot to act as a research assistant. Then the researchers instructed this assistant to help develop prompts that could jailbreak other chatbots, destroy the guardrails encoded into their such programs. Remember what the last guy, the last scientist said about guardrail? We just don't know. Here's the technology that will reprogram the program. I know it's rudimentary, but here it is, right here telling us the future they want. And again, don't underestimate binary and trinary weapon systems. These are, in my mind, they keep coming up in my mind when I talk about this stuff. You can get one thing at one time and later get something else, and then it starts it up. Maybe a third one comes in, and then they can get even more capacity built, capacity building built into what they need. But here, researchers assistant chatbots, automated attack techniques proved to be successful 42% of the time against the GPT-4, one of the large language models that power the chat GPT. It was also successful 61% of the time against Claude 2, the model underpinning Anthropic's chatbot, and 35.9% of the time against Vicuna, an open-source chatbot. The challenge, Four says, is that persona impersonation, quote, is a very core thing that these models do. Wow, they're just impersonators, folks. They aim to achieve what the user wants. And they think about what they're saying here, folks. Think about this. They aim to achieve what the user wants, and they specialize in assuming different personalities, which proved central to the form of exploitation used in the study. Quote, we want as a society to be aware of the risks of these models, says study co-author Sarosh Poor, founder of the AI safety company Harmony Intelligence. Quote, we wanted to show that it was possible and demonstrate to the world the challenges we face with this current generation of LLMs. Current and future, folks. This is interesting stuff. It's scary as heck. And this is what's going into the technology, and it's turning into synthetic life that looks like that's what the scientists are after to do under the plausible idea that they just want to make medicine, which I don't get. But at any rate, always a secondary advantage. But here we are. We are essentially the biological experiments that have been going on. We've seen this now. There's evidence of it. We've been living through it for quite a few years. We're these essentially experiments to corporations. We are here, and like the great Covey-Swindle experiment I dubbed Operation Hindsight 2020, we read in a different fashion and potentially a different type of AI, but more physically. You could actually find yourself right now in a machine, this machine. A Tesla whistleblower says autopilot system is not safe enough to be used on the public roads. It affects all of us because we are essentially experiments in public roads. It seems like all the world societies become one big experiment anymore. This guy just spoke to my heart while looking around. Yeah, what happened there? But here we are. This guy's coming out to say Krupski handed the data, 100 gigabytes worth, off to German business newspaper Handelsblatt in May, saying his attempts to bring his concerns to higher-ups internally had been roundly ignored. He claims he found evidence of the company's internal data suggesting that protocols involving the safety of driver-assisted technology had not been followed by Tesla. He brought up several documented instances of the well-known Tesla phantom braking. The data leaked by Krupski included lists of Tesla employees, often featuring their own social security numbers in addition to thousands of accident reports and internal Tesla communications. Handelsblatt and others have used these internal memos and emails as the basis of stories on the dangers of autopilot and the reasons for the 3-year delay on Cybertruck deliveries. So most people just won't say no to being part of an ongoing plunderous experiment, as Covey Swindle proved to everyone. And this is what we're being preyed upon. It's interesting revelations, I have to say. If people aren't paying attention, I've been watching this. This became important. It's now actually telling us the ongoing experiment. Science is, it's an inquiry. They've been producing it. It's a finished product that has no error. That's all it is. they just don't know. Everything's in a hypothesis. You can trust really good in something, but it's not necessarily the fact. And that's the limit of our intelligence, let alone what they want to mimic through AI. Fascinating how failed, devolved everything becomes from the origins. But here, speaking of electric cars, DARPA must have been listening behind the woodshed. And not just Tesla cars here, folks. Electric tanks, too. But no, they are not green. Raytheon to create DARPA's airborne wireless internet for energy. DARPA has tapped Raytheon to design and develop a wireless airborne relay system to deliver energy into contested environments as part of its energy web dominance program in which DARPA wants to be able to power anything from nearly anywhere. Boy, does this sound like a directed energy weapon to come. But here we go, powering the world through satellites. And I had to chuckle a little bit. There's the same problems they have back when I was looking at all this stuff, and they talked about it decades ago. It's the same problems they have today. Notwithstanding all the fantastic electronics and new designs and things, it's still got the same problems. With enough of these power relaying birds, with enough is a question, and then how many? But here we have, with enough of these power relaying birds in the air, the power, POWER systems, creates an energy web that military logisticians can use to route energy where it most needed at a moment's notice. It's a supply line in the sky capable of giving land, sky, or sea-based robots indefinite endurance or sending the same energy elsewhere if it's strategically necessary. So think about now, we got scale here. Well, I said tanks. Well, okay, but here we go. They are attempting to make an energy web based in satellites. So there is, of course, drawbacks to everything. Everything science has a drawback. We just don't know, folks. And in this case, it's the fact that you're throwing a fair amount of energy away to gain that flexibility. So, again, get to it. Green tanks just won't work here. They're just not going to. You're throwing away energy. You lose some, maybe about 20%, he says here, when you convert electricity to light in your laser. You lose more, about 50%, when you convert that laser back to electricity at the receiver. And this kind of relay station setup, you'd lose that power at every step of the way. So, maybe not such very big electric tanks are on the future of this one. But this is the big problem. Reality sucks a bit. The energy falls off. The conversion falls off. There's losses in everything. And it's not green. There's nothing that we do that's actually green where you're trying to become more efficient. Yes, we'd like to have perpetual motion, but that's, except for a couple of videos on YouTube. Now, I haven't seen it coming out, and maybe we'll never see it. And maybe those people that have some interesting ideas like so-called cold fusion may disappear at some point. So, anyway, that's for us to find out. I'm surprised all of us are looking and not seeing quite a bit of stuff. But here we have the energy web in the sky. By the time you get there, you got a couple of watts. Just enough to make a robot tank, I suppose, of a very small stature. So maybe the green tanks are going to be a lot smaller. Maybe this is somebody's hallucination. But on the other side of that technology, there might be a silver lining here, folks, as we keep reading about technological things and advancements coming on. Things that I think are really cool, but we have to really be watching out for. But here, this one's kind of interesting. I was finding fascinating the potato, how simple this little innocent potato is. And it keeps coming around through history, like who invented the russet and how that made, revolutionized us and getting potatoes to everybody. And now there's more. But here, revolutionary discovery. Russian scientists transformed potatoes into nanotech marvels. So here we go back, a little bit back into the medicine thing, but really a particular thing. And this was very interesting because they make an admission here. They may make this admission in Russia without a problem, but boy, the FDA don't like it. But here we have, less very small places, and they're very small uses. But here we have a striking scientific breakthrough. Researchers from Tumen Medical University, together with the international team, has harnessed a humble spud to create silver nanoparticles, a novel approach that could revolutionize fields from medicine to agriculture. They're findings published in the journal Helion reveal that these nanoparticles that are derived from white potato peel exhibit powerful antimicrobial and cytotoxic properties, making them a promising tool in the fight against various pathogenic microorganisms. This method not only effectively synthesizes silver nanoparticles, but also ensures they possess the necessary mechanical, structural, and therapeutic qualities. Listen to that and look at the characteristics of this. Very interesting to see looking at all these things. It's not just one, oh, there it is. No, this has interesting, again, when you get into the material science, you start finding out how things are arranged are as important as what's being arranged. And a lot of that you can just see quickly. Just look at graphene versus graphite and see the difference and watch how it's constructed is important. The difference in crystals, all important. But here, the efficacy of these nanoparticles has been rigorously tested, showing promising results against the antibiotic-resistant bacteria such as Staphylococcus aureus and Escherichia coli, that's E. coli, as well as Candida albicans and fungus responsible for candidiasis and various hospital-acquired infections. So, who'd have thunk it, folks? Silver nanoparticles are antibiotic with mechanical, structural, and therapeutic qualities. Eat your white tater skins, folks. Yeah, likely more to it on that. But you get into this ionic silver, and boy, the government just doesn't like all that. But here, they've done extensive tests. It actually works. For those of you that may not have known or had questions about it. And I guess we can get it through spuds, or you can concentrate them. Very cool stuff. So eat your spud skins. It has to be white, and I suppose it has to be in a soil that's conducive to putting it there. But it's not just silver on these healings. In healing, Russian research unveils bifidobacteria's role in wound recovery. This groundbreaking research, recently published in Medical Immunology, reveals how these bacteria's secondary metabolites significantly improve the healing of the skin's wounds, including cuts and burns. This discovery paves the way for innovative medicinal sprays and ointments that harness these benefits. The study highlights the vital role of fibroblasts, skin cells, that produce essential elements like collagen and elastin in the healing process. The team at TMSMU has shown that bifidobacteria, an integral part of human microflora, positively influences these skin cells. This influence is seen as a promising avenue for stimulating skin repair mechanisms. Their findings are exciting. The bacteria's secondary metabolites boost the production of elastin, collagen, and a variety of cytokines, which collectively speed up the wound healing process. Quote, the supernatant of Bifidobacterium bifidum holds great promise for developing treatments that ensure faster and scar-free healing of a wide range of wounds from minor cuts to severe burns. That's probably the biggest deal, the burns. But TMSMU plans to continue its investigation into the healing properties of probiotic bacteria, potentially unlocking more medical advancements in the future. So until then, nurturing your probiotic bifidobacterium bifidum may not be too dumb, folks. Maybe it's something we need to do. Look at the health and the nature around us and how it's helping us. It's bacteria. Well, this one's a good one. This is a probiotic. So there's a lot of work going on. People starting to come around. You've got to have the proper balance in your system, and that'll keep the uglies away. They're around us. They're not going to die. They're alive too, but your body's in balance and happy with all that you're supposed to have. It'll keep all that stuff down. Part of the theory is that we get these things like cancer because there's an imbalance. And so you're always going to, when I'm looking at this, I'm trying to figure out if I can figure out the system, what is the balance here? Where can I keep things working without getting too lopsided one way or the other? But we had bifidum. What is really dumb here? Not that, but maybe this. EU states threw away 4 billion euro worth of COVID vaccines. really dumb, I think. Maybe not, right? Maybe not. Really dumb to get into it to buy them in the first place. Over 200 million coronavirus jabs were reportedly sent to landfills simply because they were no longer needed. I say good on that one, folks. How about you? Except for what about the future potential of bioengineering or cellular manipulation when future organisms eat that software of life, folks? As we're hearing all this technology, these cells do this interesting stuff that nobody knows about. And I'll take about 3% for that screenplay. Anybody writes that story, it puts it in science fiction so we can see it turn up in the future. There, the EU has reportedly sent at least 215 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines to the dumpster since they were first purchased at the height of the pandemic, an analysis by Politico has revealed. In an article on Sunday, the outlet estimated that the junked jabs cost the bloc's taxpayers as much as 4 billion euro. Following the approval of the first coronavirus vaccines developed by Pfizer and BioNTech in 2021, the EU hastily entered a contract with the U.S. pharmaceutical giants to purchase 1.1 billion doses, a decision that was applauded at the time, but later turned out to have been excessive and untimely. Boy, that untimely, that's just a gaping hole in the story, isn't it? That's all they talked about here. The contract effectively forced EU countries to buy the doses despite the fact that the pandemic was already winding down. Well, it never was, and they weren't vaccines. It's a matter of law, but here we go. While efforts to donate the excess to developing countries had also failed due to logistics issues and falling demand. No, in Africa, there was no demand. So funny how they tell this story, but, well, I'm thinking that's good. What do you think? They had to destroy all this nonsense, as we now see what it's doing, what it didn't do, and the fraud and the corruption behind it at warp speed as well on top of that. So the story keeps on going on this. So over the course of the pandemic, the EU ultimately received at least 1.5 billion doses, an estimated 3 jabs per person. And they were really intending to hurt people bad. And nobody, none of these billions stepped up with the communicable disease law and said, wait a minute, we have a due process problem. You haven't done the steps you have to do as a government in order to give you the authority, in order to do the suggestion that a vaccine which stops the infectious agent is actually available or something I need to do. And what are the choices? Would be between that infectious principle, if they were found, non-fraudulently found to be one, and their doctor. Because one of the objects would be quarantine. Not mass quarantine. Quarantine of the infectious principle. The one carrying the non-fraudulently demonstrated infectious agent. Where does that sound from? That sounds right from communicable disease law. And we read it. I've read it for years and years. But they had to dump these jabs because no one wanted them. And a good thing here, folks, I believe. This was also for the virus that never was non-fraudulently demonstrated. And that was the other problem, why the word untimely here was absolutely stunning to see. And they didn't talk about it more. Well, what made it untimely? They're saying, well, it was almost over. They never really started the identification of it because it was a fraud. There's no such thing as a pandemic to a local law. I've gone over and over this. But this is interesting when you read between the lines what's going on. And boy, oh boy, a lot of money got spent here, leveraged funding, a lot of hype, a lot of fear, went into pockets of very few people, and a lot of people got harmed over this whole thing. I don't know if we'll ever see justice, maybe in 50, 60 years, but most of us will be dead by then. Don't matter. The outlet admits, the only thing I can say to you folks, the Generation Z and younger than that, learn what I'm saying now while you can, and then if this comes on you, you'll be fortified to stop it. And I understand Generation Z. I made a broadcast on Generation Z. You're a hopeful group, and I hope you can move that forward. I think this is the answer for the future. You can point to this kind of stuff, point out that they didn't do their job underneath communicable disease law or any other law they try to shove down your throat by quick, fast, warp speed attack. You can shut it down just by asking for due process. Look for it. It's there. Look for the unconstitutional laws that are passed as lawful. and kill those as well, challenge everything up front. But the outlet admits that the calculations are only estimates because governments have been reluctant to actually report or reveal the scale of the waste. However, calculations are likely underestimated, if anything. And that's exactly what I was saying. Go in fraud, waste, and abuse. Go after them for the lack of duty, and there you go. They're saying it's waste. I said it long ago, but here it is, right in the news, right in the notice to us, if we pay attention. And I said all this way early, the same thing. There's the fraud, the waste, the abuse. That's all for, it was sitting there to expound on, to expose a lever to pry this fraud out from the rock it was hiding under and expose it. Now the complicit governments hunt down scapegoats here to identify that I've identified here behind which had ages ago. And as the corporations try to capitalize on their fraud, the prosecutors are in on it, as we can also see. Meanwhile, it says, the Poland and Hungary, which have refused to accept any more vaccines, are now being sued by Pfizer for non-payment, while in Romania, prosecutors are looking to try the country's former prime minister and two health ministers for causing over 1 billion euro damages to the state through unnecessary vaccine purchases. Fascinating what they're looking at here, but look at the scapegoating going on. The EU wastefulness and questionable deal with the Pfizer has also come with political blowback. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen has been under fire ever since it emerged. She had privately communicated with pharmaceutical giant CEO Albert Bourla via text messages and phone calls while the deal was still being negotiated. Despite the reported wastefulness, the jabs will continue to flow to the EU under the Pfizer contract until at least 2027. So where were these rule of law prosecutors? That's bar association style stuff. This is a rule of law brand of democracy and justice. And where are these prosecutors when the Comey swindle rolled out to stop it, folks? But they're all interested now. Nowhere. Everywhere complicit. And you are paying the price, whether you agreed to the jab or not, societally, globally, in this great global reset. You're watching it happen. You were experienced, went right through it with me. And it's just as you were told behind a woodshed. Beginning 2019. If and you don't listen behind the woodshed and learn your lessons in life, just might spank you harder and longer. As we looked, and wow, how many I was thinking maybe 3.5-4 years. It's going to go. It's just going to continue going. And still people don't really get it. But as a consequence of this global attack at warp speed, to quicken the objective of the concurrent 2030 agenda to austerity, and we're now hearing it plainly stated for those questioning the good sense you're hearing being told to you behind the woodshed. Farmers block Berlin streets. There's a video. As protesters fear the German government's austerity measures will force farmers to shut down. So it's moved from the Netherlands over to Germany. Angry farmers block off a street near the iconic Brandenburg Gate, carrying placards reading, "Your politics are a declaration of war against farmers," and "Enough is enough." The protesters fear that the planned budget cuts will leave Germany's agricultural sector nearly 1 billion euro worse off next year. According to Berlin Police Department, about 1,700 tractors and 6,600 farmers took part in the protest. Quote, "I'm not shutting myself off from us having to save, but it must be done in a way that we take people along with us, and farmers are the ones who supply us with food," Ozdemir said. "These cuts overburden the sector." The German Farmer Association and the Gland Creates Connection lobby threatened to expand the demonstration if the austerity measures are implemented. DBV President Joachim Ruckwied warned at the rally that, quote, "From January 8th, we will be present everywhere in a way the country has never experienced before. We will not accept this." And you shouldn't. It's not a war just against the farmer, though. But they know, these folks know what they're attacking. They know that they need to make you starve. But austerity by 2030, I've been talking about it. The words are coming out. They kind of have been. But now you're seeing it connected to people having to respond. This was always coming down, but they're just, until it affected people, they're not acting. Well, act. Get it. Enough is enough. I've been asking about that. When is enough enough? Well, if right now it's over there, they keep talking about it as a group. They really need to go after what the core of it is. And it's really the Agenda 2030. It's they here intend on maiming and killing the people of the world everywhere. It's not just the farmers, as they did through Covey Swindle for the pagan green religion fertility goddess Gaia. Baphomet's playground buddy. It seems ironic here, doesn't it? But don't be of the world, folks. Don't let this happen to you. This is what they are hoping that you'll do. You'll just protest. Yeah, it's important, but you're going to have to get boots on the ground better and more formidable against this organized system. And the one that, what happened in Netherlands started to go look good. I heard too much more. You notice it's kind of calmed down. The farmers and those people actually went in and started to run for office and started to win. However, I pointed out the caveat, the leader of those groups that did that was actually paid by Monsanto, if the report was correct that I read. But the ongoing promotion here, to the death of the future generations, as we're seeing, under cover of compassion and moral right. These folks never, ever quit, as we see African state revokes vote against ceasefire in Gaza. And these issues, they seem to sound right, but when you start reading through the story, they're actually speaking to something else. They're giving us notice of other things as well. Liberia voted against a ceasefire in Gaza a week ago, along with the U.S. being the only African country to do so. There's a big death cult, and all of a sudden everybody's starting to figure that out, what's going on in Gaza. But Liberian president spoke at a Sunday church service. Now, this is important. Understand this, how this is working out. Who he's speaking to, what he represents, what he's playing to represent, but what he starts to speak to is totally incongruent. But we'll read on here. The Sunday church service is where it said that the government's position was rejected by the, quote, wicked Liberian who worked at the Liberian embassy in Washington. The name of the embassy official who changed Monrovia's vote was not mentioned. Quote, a wicked person in the embassy, when they told us to vote, that person, whatever they did, that Liberian that voted for war is a wicked Liberian, and God will not spare that person and every person's life that was taken in that war because that person voted. They will also feel the wrath of the true living God, President Wiye claimed. At the same time, Wiye clarified that his support for ending the war was not against the United States, but the Liberia, that by Liberia stood with the United Nations and the rest of the world for global peace and stability. Okay, I'll stop right there. There's more to read on this story. The Liberian president is either extremely wicked himself or so naive he is in danger to himself and to the people of his country. Even Putin just recognized his weakness to be naivete. That's a mark of a good guy. He's recognizing he had a naivete toward the West. But here, no one escapes this. Right? Anybody can miss these points. The UN is not for global peace and stability. At least if one has to also admit it is a failed institution, not worthy of reliance. The UN is a tool, and a tool. Peace and stability is the cover for deceit and wars, is what they're doing. The Liberian president did not need to rely on an ostensible purpose of the UN if his actions were moral. Morality here predates the UN. No, he's going to go on a non-governmental organization, not the morality of stopping the killing, the murder, the genocide. And this global ambassador speaking to the faithful is a change agent here, this president in that church. No different than other nations wanting to kill off those providing your food in the name of prosperity. This is all coming out of the UN. He's supporting here, this in church, no doubt, no less. But through the UN, that they want you and your future generations sustainably dead, in particular, any green religion heretics among my listeners. This is what this president was promoting in a church. Remember, the green religion, it's a different church. The Liberian president did the correct thing, removing the albeit meaningless ceasefire veto for the wrong reason, extending to and promoting a false secular non-governmental authority in the house of God. Now, that's what's wicked. You know, what's really a disappointment is a lot of the people in that church don't know that. And that shows how fallen we are as people everywhere. It's, the guy can feel that able to walk in and say that. He's promoting a globalist, secular, I don't even know what you call these guys. These are just killers. These are psychopaths. They do not intend peace at all. They don't. That's not what they do. Otherwise, we'd probably be seeing it. But anyway, moving on to more things right here. The death cult that's out in the world that doesn't mean peace. Doesn't, you know, the AI wasn't programmed to find peace in the world. No, it's found to do the technocrats' hardware for to keep you more under surveillance and control. But nothing here, as we move on into Gaza, more closely what they're talking about. That here, the IDF shot Israelis as they waved white flags. You find that the Gaza is nothing but a Zionist killing field. And it's done anything here to that might advance the chosen is what's going on when we read this story. Shooting people seeking to surrender violates the open fire regulations, the chief of the general staff has admitted. So, but who cares? I mean, it violates the regulations. They still killed three Israelis here. We're waving white flags, one of them. And this is, to me, a desperate Zionist Federation belligerent occupier that morality is not in them. We just prove it in their actions. There's no peace in these rabid beasts, and they admit to knowing, not knowing any. And so we see the UN now supposed to be for peace. No, it's not. It's not taking any action. It's a tool. It's not what we've been told. And quote, it is forbidden to shoot. It's forbidden, folks. Listen to these words. Talk is cheap. But it's forbidden to shoot at these those who raise a white flag and ask to surrender. But this shooting was carried out during combat and under pressure. It's forbidden, but there's an excuse. It's not an excuse. This is just a way to cover the psychopathy that's going on, the genocide that's going on. It's beyond that. It's into promoting the Zionist movement, not the Jewish people at all. The people of the Zionist Federation and those aiding and abetting them under color of authority need to be put in a prison island, folks, as far as I can tell in all this, until this Zionista Federation and the cohorts can learn to live in peace with people. The UN's not going to do it. The people of the world are going to have to figure out a way to move these people to a nice prison island, and if that's possible, get them over there. Again, I'm not sure what to do with people that are like that in the world. I wish I could put them on a green little marble out in space, but we can't do that either. But find a nice Pacific prison island and stick all these people there, all these cohorts that agree with what's going on in Palestine. And understand what I'm saying here. A lot of people in America would be on that island, a ton. But I still say sooner the better. The UN's not going to do peace, but people that are causing unpeace need to be moved someplace, convicted and moved en masse, just like they tried to remove en masse the people that have right to be there. The story here, three Israeli hostages were mistakenly killed by Israeli forces on Friday, did everything in their power to demonstrate that they were posed no threat, including holding a white flag. The chief of the general staff of Israeli Defense Forces has said the three hostages, who survived 70 hellish days, moved towards the IDF soldiers and were killed by our forces' fire, Halevi Halevi said, adding that they moved without shirts so that we would not suspect them of carrying a bomb on their bodies, and held a white cloth so that we would understand. An initial investigation has revealed that the three emerged shirtless from a building 10 tens of meters away from a group of Israeli troops in Gaza City neighborhood of Shejavia. That didn't work out, but holding up a stick with a white cloth on it. They stood near the building with the words HELP and SOS spray-painted on the exterior walls. Boy, it doesn't even sound like they're being held by Hamas there, does it? At any rate, moving on here with this story. According to an Israeli military official who spoke to the journalist on condition of anonymity, one of the IDF soldiers felt threatened and opened fire, killing two of the men instantly. Sound like the cops in America to me. But to hear, as a matter of principles of engagement, they have no right of self-defense to justify these murders either. Remember that. These Israelis do not have the right of self-defense to feel threatened. They're causing the trouble, let alone killing their own here, folks. So certainly this is a beast in the Holy Land. It's godless, without any sense of mercy or justice at all, and we don't see any evidence. Again, the pack have shown, this pack has shown themselves to be rabid demons, and together with their aiders and abettors, they need to be shipped to a prison island. I've suggested before it'd be better to move them over to Baja, which would also provide them three times more land in the armpit of America near Hollyweird, their propaganda center. But the Zionistas have proven now that they don't deserve more than a small prison island. So, yeah, let's exclude another British prison island. That excludes another British prison island of Australia. The out-of-their-mind Zionistas deserve much smaller. That's way too much for them, if that much at all. And I just heard in the news there might be a place we could actually send them, these folks that believe that peace is, on Earth is impossible, that they are chosen, that there's people that support them and support genocide. These people need to be put on a small desert island, a prison island out in the middle of the ocean, and this sort of chosen has been proven they cannot live with or amongst decent people. And I just found out, when you go to the Sea of China, with all the news over there, they have these little shoals, which is where I think all these people that believe in genocide, they want to commit genocide and support it, need to be placed. And these shoals are underwater part of the time, and then they're not underwater at tide, when the tide goes out. So I think that's where we need to put these people, and let them think about the world as their life is, not as they're killing other people. But this third guy ran back to the building and screamed help in the Hebrew from inside, at which point the brigade commander ordered the troops to stop shooting, but another burst of fire fatally wounded him, and he later died. And so that sounds to me like an anti-Semitic killing, speaking in Hebrew, as the gentleman did, as well as perpetrated by the Zionista regime militant here. And it sounds, again, like desperation in combat. Not clear-thinking elite troops here, as they've been promoted by these Zionista forces and given an ostensible goal of genocidally mowing down Gaza, is the return of the hostages. They're killing the very hostages that they claimed that they were coming to save as they mow down Gaza. But so consider all this. It's just incongruent. These people are just looking for any excuse to kill. And I don't think the world needs them around, to tell you the truth, or any of their supporters. And again, I want to understand how many Americans would go to this prison island that support genocide and the conditions that we're seeing. Might be a nice, refreshing place to live anymore. I don't know, but I'd like to see at least some justice come out of it. That we're not tells us the kind of world we're living in. But here, I don't know more. But these Israelis were killed because the Israeli soldiers are killing everything living, mowing down Palestinians and about their home and anything around those areas. They're really not looking for the hostages, it seems to be. I think this is proof of that thing. The Israeli command is actually speaking these words, explaining that it was forbidden, and yet it still happened. And I suppose it could be said, recovering even the bodies here is successful Hannibal directive execution, don't you think? And I can't argue against myself on these things, these thoughts that I'm seeing. The incongruities are so stark, and so much harm and death is going on. I don't know how people with the power, like nations, are still hanging around, but, you know, just talking about it. And here as the prison island as a condemned aider and abettor, will December 8th, 2003 be another day of infamy for the Zionista-managed U.S. government regime? Why can't the U.S. ever say no to Israel? Interesting question in this article. The American UN veto on a Gaza ceasefire is a low point of wag the dog international politics. Again, UN is a tool. UN is not for peace. When you have one vote veto to stop, to continue war and genocide against people, that's not an organization of peace. But December 8, 2023, in a day that will live in infamy, remember America on December 7th, but in December 8th, we get another one now coming. The United States made history of the worst kind by using a permanent seat of the UN Security Council to veto a resolution calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres deployed a rarely used procedure to promote the ceasefire, putting his authority on the line. Referring to Article 99 of Chapter 15 of the UN Charter, he already implied that international peace and security were in danger. His spokesperson was explicit that Guterres was making a dramatic constitutional move while maintaining diplomatic balance by also highlighting the Hamas attack on Israel. Guterres' letter in Security Council depicted the catastrophic suffering of the Palestinians under the ongoing Israeli attack and concluded that nowhere was safe in Gaza. All to no avail. He just pleaded peace. All to no avail. The U.S. could not be swayed and maintained its de facto unconditional support for Israel, even while the latter is conducting an intensified genocidal assault in Gaza and its civilian population. This is no longer up for debate and no secret either. Israeli leaders have repeatedly made statements that signal the kind of intent that is a crucial element in the crime of genocide, while their actions and those of their forces on the ground speak even louder than their words. That's what Lieber Code. You knows them when you sees them, folks. I don't really have to go so far anymore. You know, Lieber Code, that Article 1, that really kind of freed me up a bit after I read, wow, you know, all my study in international law, you think you got to be upright, but you're dealing in law of war. So as an enemy, you don't want to call attention to yourself. And so that was a little bit of illuminating to me, that very first article, and that it was the first article. You knows them when you see them. I'm paraphrasing. It doesn't say that. But they don't have to tell you they're an occupying force. But you'll know them by their actions. And so here we go. Pretty simple. I don't need to know a whole lot more. The world, well, we want to know more. Not for this. Not too hard. The world has taken note. It took no special bias for the Palestinian leadership, the one derived from the PLO as well as Hamas, to identify the vetoes as disastrous and a disgrace and another blank check given the occupying state to massacre, destroy, and displace. China and Russia have denounced American double standards and the death sentence Washington has handed down on future Palestinian victims of the Israeli assault. Historians do not like to predict, but here's my historian's prediction, the writer and the author here. None of the above will ever fade and take on a softer hue. What the United States did on December 8th will never appear understandable or so complex that decent people won't condemn it. This is, on the contrary, will provide a lasting example of what so many Americans profess to love, moral clarity. And that clarity will find an inexcusable, unmitigated, and yes, evil act that will remain known to human history as precisely that. And here's the thing, I want to cut right back. Did you hear also what the Missouri Court said about these one enactment that would mash together all these acts? Can't understand it. Too much. Too complex. No, it wasn't even lawful. And I hope that this is a lasting example for future generations, if we have those future generations. And I'm hoping this guy is right. We need to really stop this. But, folks, a tiny island, okay, a tiny island, the tiniest, one partially submerged at high tide for these folks, all these folks. And we've been reading through the news. People have been talking about it. I mention it here periodically. And then something came up in the news that's kind of interesting. And so we have a couple of stories that kind of focus us in on what's going on and the evil in the world playing out satanic mass taking place in Gaza, what U.S. Israel want. From an interview with American author and journalist Mark Klein regarding the Gaza war, the instinct for committing genocide is deeply embedded and encoded within the spiritual DNA of the Jewish state and has been for thousands of years, a fact to which Netanyahu himself attested in the recent comments concerning to the annihilation of Amalek down to every man, woman, and suckling child. These words are not new, and they didn't begin with Herzl, Jabotinsky, or Ben-Gurion. The Jewish state of today is the 21st century AD, is the same Jewish state that existed in the baby crocodile, as a baby crocodile in the 21st century BC. All that has been changed is the interim is that it has grown to maturity and can rest assured that if the Jewish state that existed 4,000 years ago had all the awful weapons that it possessed today, but just its armaments, but as well in terms of media power, money, political influence, etc., that what we are witnessing today would have been a fiat accompli back then as well. The satanic mass taking place right now in Gaza, and let us make no mistake about the fact that it's exactly that, a satanic black mass dedicated to human sacrifice, is exactly what both the Israeli and the United States government want. And even if the United States government were not entirely supportive of it, nevertheless, it would do nothing to stop it, given the fact that the Israelis' Mossad has virtually every member of Congress, as well as the United States President himself, paralyzed with the compromising information that, if made public, would see these various elements possibly jailed for life. Financial crimes, crimes of sexual nature involving children, crimes involving corruption, treason, even murder. The Jewish state would have ceased to exist decades ago were it not for the unholy assistance of the U.S. has given in terms of money, weaponry, and political protection. And again, all of this is a result of a compromising blackmail information that Israel has on all persons of importance and influence all the way up to the president. Furthermore, Israel has smuggled dozens or possibly even hundreds of nuclear weapons into every country in the West, including America, and uses the threat of detonating these nukes within the countries as an ultimate game changer in forcing America and the West to accede to her bloodthirsty and diabolical plans, including those taking place in Gaza right now. Very interesting statements right there. Very interesting threats, a lot of which I would agree with, some I have never quite heard or could be able to prove, but plausible nonetheless when you figure the infiltration that's gone on. But black mass, and nevertheless, we continue on that. And interestingly, the same week, we hear you think the we think that the satanic rituals are not promoted or and striking at American heartland. We hear that the ex-Mississippi House candidate destroys satanic display at an Iowa Capitol. A crimson robe clad statue that got Cassidy 35 so riled up was that of a man's body with a horned goat's head. The altar had prayer candles surrounding it and was erected by the Satanic Temple. This registered a religious group, as others of the same ilk are allowed to display their symbols in the capital of Christmas according to state rules. Cassidy later told media that after seeing the blasphemous statue of Baphomet, his outrage got the better of him. Cassidy beheaded the effigy and destroyed the display beyond repair, as per the Iowa Department of Public Safety. Florida's Republican governor rushed to the defense of the charged man, posting on X, quote, "Satan has no place in our society." Well, folks, I don't know if Satan is dominion of the world. I think we're way past that. But anyway, moving the story here along. Well, Cassidy has set up, I just found this fascinating, is all together. These concepts are altogether coming and promoted. They're like in the news to promote this thing along. While Cassidy has since set up a donation to cover the cost of legal fees and his defense, people on the internet were split in the assessment of his actions. Some argued Cassidy had no right to do what he did and asked that he didn't stand for the First Amendment. So three questions I have, maybe four, maybe five, of many here. There's lots of questions because this can quickly become a thorny thicket supported by any number of frameworks that you can put on this, but maybe on the challenge of standing before the First Amendment, does any morally acting body, such as a state, have a sovereign right to promote fraud? As a continuing extension, does anyone, not just a state, but anyone have a First Amendment right to promote fraud? Or how about the right to incite riot or treachery? Does anyone possess the right pursuant to the First Amendment, that one? Well, the courts have said no, there's a limit to some of this. What did I just read out here with the treachery and fraud? Is this thing, this entity we call Satan, that's known to be that, what the action is? It's also genocide. It's also what we're seeing, the ritual going on in Gaza. So I just found this an interesting correlation. But moving the story along here from the First Amendment and questioning, is it a violation of the First Amendment? The Supreme Court says that there's certain things you can't do in the First Amendment. I don't know of anybody or any state or anyone that can promote fraud. And so, but from a Christian perspective, isn't Satan acknowledged to be a liar, a murderer, a wager of war, of dominion and domination against mankind, committing acts of violence, constituting a clear and present danger? Isn't that acknowledged already, already known? This is the antithesis of the Prince of Peace and a moral and lawful society, and the symbols such as the Baphomet, even if allegedly confused, which I've understood in reading, there's a confusion about it, but or notwithstanding that, or said to be worshiping by the moneylender, the Knights Templar here. This is the symbol. There's a hybrid pagan worship. The evil here, the historical sin, is not something to be protected or fostered or encouraged, is it? So I'm wondering about this story. What is it? It all comes up at the same time in the same week. We're witnessing terrible, terrible, terrible sin, terrible things in Gaza. But coming from that Christian perspective, there's a sentiment that this is not proper. This is not something you're free to speak about to promote. Fraud, treachery, killing, murder. I guess we're not supposed to, we're not supposed to do that stuff. You're not supposed to incite riot. The very depiction, I guess, did at some point. But anyway, keep on moving here. I just find it fascinating that this came up at the same time. If a religion here professing that, quote, you don't have to obey anyone, you're only accountable to yourself, but why the invocation of the deity representing the foreign authority and to rebellion, which is what it does, the Baphomet? Why the invocation of that deity at all? Why the foreign authority if it's only to yourself? Is incongruities, in my estimation, to start with. And that's two servitudes inconsistent with the accountability sentiment, being only accountable to yourself. This sentiment would also suggest and admit that Cassidy is within his right to himself to destroy a symbol he felt is existential threat to him and the greater society within which he lives. So at that point, isn't the state law charging Cassidy contrary to a satanic principle in violation of the right of religion and free speech it allowed to be presented in a supposed house of the people? These are just the questions that occurred to me. I'm reading, and I'm thinking, well, this is a big violation by the state as all. And so why is Cassidy being charged? And I guess we'll play that out. I don't know. I just found it, talking to this black mass, kind of brought this all started to come together. Speaking of wicked things, another wicked thing here, the worshiper of black mass in Gaza and anarcho-capitalistic purveyor of Western, it's my way or the highway fiat, turned tyrant anyone opposing him in Argentina. This guy went and worships at Israel on this. They're holding a black mass human sacrifice in Gaza. And this guy comes on the stage. It's been another fascination a bit. And this is the anti-globalist globalist. It didn't take this globalist too long to expose himself, we didn't know better here. Consider this next story in context of one's token citizenship, social credit, controlling all the areas of one's life that unexpectedly runs contrary to any official narrative or one's shared responsibility or without due course of law protections, and then as well in the church and the Ethiopian president saying very similar stuff and promoting very similar things. As we can read, Argentinian protesters could lose welfare payments. And this brings up a different aspect on top of it all. Who's running the show here in the world, of the world? Well, the new president has moved to discourage, he says, demonstrations against his shock therapy plan. Someone's supposed to be in rule, law, and democracy. I'm going to de-dollarize the government. Protesting is a right, but so is the ability to move freely through the Argentine territory to get to work. Minister of Human Capital, Sandra Petrovello, said in the video message to the nation posted by Milei's office, anyone who promotes, instigates, organizes, or participates in roadblocks will lose access to the ministry and could lose their welfare benefits as well, Petrovello said. So, first off, Petrovello, tell that to the farmers in Europe protesting their governance intends to kill them and those going to work. Yeah, it starts with something plausible here, folks, if you listen, reasonable, such as this, that protesting is a right, but so is the ability to move freely through the Argentina territory to get to work. That's you can protest, but don't stop the traffic. Yes, but it won't end there, because he's also eliminating by fiat control, not just the money, but the fiat control, a device the people themselves have long established. Setting up roadblocks known as Puerta de Ruta, the preferred form of protest in South American country, Milei has sought to outlaw the practice in anticipation of a backlash against his shock therapy policies for economic and political recovery. So I thought in a democracy the legislature would need to outlaw such a habit and custom, if it could, not this executive. Now, I say if it could, habit and custom, it makes law. This is another fact that people don't understand. So anticipating a backlash is also a failure of communication, and this is also the burden of Milei given his shock therapy. People are responding. He didn't communicate this quite right. He didn't get the perception right before he moved. This guy is just a tyrant with a chainsaw. We saw him coming. I talked about it. See, under the same global financial system, democracy, so-called, all those protesting the intention of the governance to kill them will suffer loss. Think about the freedom truckers and supporters in Kyrgyzstan as one persisting, executed model of the world already against that. And what every benefit the government provides becomes a penalty is why no one can be so tied into the government that they can be tied up by the government. Listen very carefully to these news articles, these notices to us. They're telling us what's going on. They tell us who we're dealing with. But this guy promotes the black mass going on in Gaza. He comes in and he just, whatever his words are, you start watching what he's supporting and who he's supporting, and he's going against the people already. Just habit and custom and being changed right before our eyes by an executive. It's just fascinating what people get away with, and he may just do it. I don't know. Again, make an audacious statement, an audacious plan. Maybe people go there because you're in such a bad strait, you can't do more. And this is how they get people. They get you so bad off that you'll take any change, even bad change. But here, Yemen, we'll move this over. Yemen's not just talking. All these folks are talking. Milei's doing some stuff, but he's doing it in violation of the people's long-held ways of protesting things they don't like. And they don't like what he's doing, the way he's doing it. That's up for them to decide. I'm not making any decision on that. But you watch how quickly the technocrat comes along and controls things. And really doesn't care about the people, actually. But Yemen in this doesn't get along. And this is, I find this fascinating, this Yemen story. But watching it, it's toning up this week, is really starting to rile up now. More attention's being paid to Yemen. But here, Yemen isn't talking, just talking. They're taking action, like I've been telling you. You got to take action. And Pepe Escobar writes a story here to, I think you need to read through. And take some some points. Ready to, he says, Yemen ready to stare down a new imperial coalition. But you got to understand that Yemeni people, they've had cholera, they're suffering their own genocide at the hands of the Saudis, supported by the United States too. They're the other part of this. And it's interesting, they were the first ones to step up. To what? Stop oppression. Like I talked last week, your district attorneys were to stop oppression. You'd think they'd have sent a letter to the United States federal government and said, hey, wait, hold it. We got some oppressed people. They're not in our jurisdiction, but we have a thing to say here. The latest chapter, Coalition Genocide Prosperity, whose official heroic denomination and trademark of the Pentagon's PR wizards is Operation Prosperity Guardian, allegedly engaged in ensuring freedom of navigation in the Red Sea. Translation, this is Washington all but declaring war on Yemen's Ansar Rula. An extra U.S. destroyer has been already dispatched to the Red Sea. Ansar Rula sticks to its guns and is by no means intimidated. The Houthi military has already stressed that any attack on Yemeni assets or Ansar Rula missile launch sites could color the entire Red Sea literally red. That got me thinking biblically too. These references are just interesting how they're trundling through. Are they going to be that? I don't know, but I find it interesting people speak through that language. With a single move, de facto maritime blockage, Ansar Rula proved that the king is naked. Yemen has done more in practice to defend the Palestinian cause than most of the key regional players put together. Incidentally, they were all ordered by Netanyahu to in public to shut up, and they did. Ansar Rula, Supreme Political Council member Mohammed al-Bukhati, felt compelled to re-stress the obvious. Quote, even if America succeeds in mobilizing the entire world, our operations in the Red Sea will not stop unless the massacre in Gaza stops. We will not give up the responsibility of defending the Mustasavin, the oppressed ones, of the earth. The world better get ready. Aircraft carrier sunk may become the new 9/11. And that's been the thought on these, when these new missiles that are coming out, that these ship killer missiles, they're messing maybe with the wrong people here. I'm not so sure. The United States is not setting that up as a potential false flag as well. There is a lot to cover here with Pepe brings to the coverage, which needs to be understood, though. You need to really kind of look at this. But I want to remind my listener as well, if you look into the duties of the Attorney General again, your state, you may find that the legislature has said that it is the duty of that office to protect the defenseless and oppressed. So the Yemenis, without immediate hesitation, came out to engage the responsibility of defending the Mustasavin, the oppressed ones of the earth. Now, this is what I find very interesting. It's in our laws that the law officer of the states is supposed to do this. And yet we only see one evidence in the world of that actually happening. This is great stuff when you look at it that way. At least to me it is. So where have all these attorney generals of each state at least called for the same here, even insisting upon senators or congressmen for their dereliction on this? Or are you further witnessing here to the intention of the states in supporting and attacking the defenseless and oppressed? I've told you about this carnival mirror. What's done over there is a reflection on us, and what doesn't get happened from our side on what's supposed to be done isn't going to be happening out there. And you're watching that reflection everywhere you look now. It's really a fascinating thing as a witness of history. Very fascinating thing. But we have some duty-bound officials in the United States silent. No different than the Kobe Swindle. Where were these prosecutors at the time? Like in Romania, where were the prosecutors at the time the fraud hit? Looking over to make sure the executive was doing what they were supposed to be doing. Checking that. The judiciary saying, hey, we're seeing a problem. Checking that immediately. No, nothing. And this wasn't even something to make up. It wasn't an opinion. It was written down and failed. Where was these law people? Now, this is beyond law. This is what's done morally. And Yemen is the only one that stood up. I don't know one way or the other if it's right, wrong, or different what they're doing, but they're going to, their intention is stated as a good thing, a moral thing, to stop the oppression against a people oppressed. Pentagon concerned with cost of repelling Houthi attacks. So for us, it's all money. The Houthis don't care what it's going to cost, not even in their own deaths. They're not in it for money. It's a moral thing. And I think that has a lot, we need to look at that. That's a very high standard. And they were not hesitant on it. I think that's the biggest credit I can think, see on this. They did not hesitate. They're doing whatever they can do. They're actually saying now they got over a million man army. If they can figure out a way to get it over to Gaza, it's going there. While they're being attacked by the United States through Saudi Arabia and the UAE and all these other things. And they're doing this on their own. Iran may be helping them a bit, but they're having at least an arm's length distance. Iran's not doing much of anything. These Houthis that are causing a problem, a real problem in the world on just standing up and saying, stop the oppression. And we're not stopping until you do. And so the Pentagon comes out and says, we're concerned about the cost of repelling the Houthi. Why? Because they got these drones that are going, they're getting shot down, but it costs $1 million or more in a missile the United States sends out or the French send out to take out a $20,000 drone. So apparently the Houthis are winning there too. Again, the United States doesn't know what a economic war is at all. But here, I want to present something. This is not even a new situation. This Palestinian cause has been going on since the invasion, since the overthrow, the usurpation of their land, and from a 2 minute 47 second video from Twitter, is said to be a composite, but listen to the words. The speech here is nevertheless evocative. Very, very good. I've gotten to appreciate Malcolm X a little bit more, but because I can't play the entire video here, I'd like to read excerpts taken from another article written, A Quagmire of Death and Despair by Selwyn Kudjo, about the Palestinian cause. The words here, Malcolm X, not to be confused by Elon Musk's X, for sure. 60 years ago, Malcolm X spoke about the Palestinian cause. 60 years it's been going on. The Palestinian struggle, he says, quote, the Palestinian struggle for justice is not just a cry for justice. It's a blistering battle for the most fundamental rights that every living soul on this planet should inherit by birthright. Just as the civil rights movement in the United States fought against the chains of racial discrimination, so too do the Palestinian people strive to shatter the chains of occupation and tyranny. Advocating for the rights of the Palestinian people is not synonymous with denying the rights of security of the Jewish people. The fight for justice in Palestine is not an assault on any particular group, but an unwavering stand against the policies of the Zionist state that has for so too long stripped Palestinians of their rights. It is in the best interest of the entire world to seek a just and enduring solution to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The battle for justice in Palestine is not merely a political struggle, it is an element moral battle. It is an elemental moral battle. It's the fight for the right to exist in peace and security, free from the ceaseless specter of violence and dispossession. The birth of Israel in 1948 brought forth the mass expulsion and dispossession of hundreds of thousands of Palestinians from their ancestral homes and land. This is a historic injustice that continues to haunt the lives of the Palestinians to this very day, 60 years later than that statement. And there's more that he said in 2 minutes. Powerful statements. Powerful statements. And we as a peoples of the world have been living this disgrace forever, it seems. It may be to the end of history, is what I'm told. And I'm disappointed to hear that, but that's not up to me. And I'd be happy to see the end of that. Maybe soon. We'll see. But another quagmire of despair. As we watch, it just seems to be in lots of places around the world. Pentagon says it must choose between U.S. and Ukraine. The U.S. Department of Defense says it could soon have to sacrifice the country's own readiness unless Congress approves new aid for Kiev. Certainly, we do not retain the option to send 4.4 billion, Brigadier General Patrick Ryder said, but noted that these are tough choices because ultimately, at the end of the day, we start to have to make decisions about our own readiness and our ability to continue to support Ukraine in the way that they need to be supported on the battlefield. Now, remember, they were just questioning how much it's going to cost to fight the Houthis. They're interested in the dollar. The Houthis are interested in a moral act. I don't know. I don't know what if you can see the future, but the moral act usually wins out. You can't throw enough fiat at it. These people don't die. They are saying in Yemen, you think you had a trouble in Afghanistan? We're glad to take the fight directly to you. These people aren't backing down. And immediately, folks, they morally came right out and said, we're gonna do what we can. So in this story here, isn't it a treasonous act to sacrifice the country's own readiness at all for a foreign country, folks? Isn't that what we're doing? We're running ourselves down economically? There's a whole lot at play here. The stinking abyss is we're sliding right into it at warp speed as well. Going on here, another example of discussion and elucidation of what's happening, what's really going behind the Biden's threat to send Americans to fight Russia. We heard this about a week ago, that this was I told you, be careful, it's not really what you're hearing, but there's still discussion about this. The United States President's tough talk is laying the groundwork to blame Republicans for losing Ukraine. So this was a political statement. Why I said be careful, it's not really what you hear. You're not hearing what they're doing. They're telling you what it is, but you got to listen very carefully to the words. The troops aren't showing up unless, and there's like three or four conditions, and those likely will never be seen that way, but here, in essence, he has delivered two key points. One was his unfounded, if popular, guess presented with the usual aplomb as certainty that if Russia wins the war in Ukraine, it will inevitably go on to attack other countries, since Biden also assumes that Moscow's future targets would include NATO member states. Clearly, in Eastern Europe in particular, he concluded that such a Russian attack would trigger America's treaty obligations to fight Russia directly. Of course, experts at least know that even NATO's famed Article 5 is not the hair trigger many believe it to be. In reality, according to the letter of NATO, treaty members states do not automatically have to go to war when another member state is attacked. But it is a political fact that NATO's real-world credibility rests on the idea that its members will defend each other militarily and without hesitation, except you find out they don't have the ammunition, and they knew that going in. But remember, Ukraine is not a member of NATO, and Russia is not going to attack NATO member country. And Biden and Austin both use the limitation in either NATO members or European being attacked before the United States would commit troops. This writer is identifying the identical thing I told you before. The X message to Salenti that I wrote and posted the night before, I pointed out if Putin attacks is a non sequitur. And this fact is stated in the article as well when you see Moscow would be foolish to attack one European NATO member state after the other. And unlike the West, Russia recently has given very few signs of being foolish. It is, in other words, Russia's rationality that a proxy defeated NATO Europe will have to rely on. How ironic, the writer says. And I'm again, the United States is all deception. Okay, so we've dumped a lot of money in Ukraine, another killing field for ulterior motives. And we've watched all this stuff come out. And this is, it's not a Prince of Peace type action. I'll just put it there. World War III approaches just as planned. If massive depopulation is the end goal, then continued support for Ukraine is the way to go. Again, the killing fields. These globalist psychopaths just want death. Black mass, just ritual, killing left and right. Military conflicts are not the result of random chance. Deliberate planning is involved. Zelensky is an acolyte of Klaus Schwab's World Economic World Forum, WEF, the organization behind the Great Reset, according to Leon Kushner, a writer who has raised the Holocaust survivors from, who was raised by Holocaust survivors from Ukraine. It's not just this guy. Klaus Schwab says it in his book. And the UN goals are there. They're just supporting all this that's been going on for decades and decades and decades and then maybe almost 100 years. But we get it back to the technocracy nonsense. Since 2014, oligarchs run in a mob style and chose the then actor Zelensky to be part their presidential puppet. WEF's Klaus Schwab bragged about helping elect him and his equivalent Canadian puppet Trudeau. Just about every rich and famous player has been to Ukraine and came back with even more money. From Bill Gates to Joe Biden, from George Soros to the Clintons, they all know the Ukraine is open for business. The Biden administration in the U.S. has sent hundreds of billions of dollars in military assistance to Ukraine already. If the goal is to prevent bloodshed, well, this is not the way to do it. If, as speculated by some, there exists an oligarch plan to massive human depopulation, then engineered wars are an ideal way to achieve that. It has happened before. In the First World War, 21.5 million died, which 13 million were civilians. The civilian deaths were largely caused by starvation, exposure, disease, military encounters, and massacres in Gaza. It's just right there by definition. In the Second World War, 40 to 50 million died, the largest of any war. Currently, we are seeing the advanced stages of just this. As the U.S. and its NATO allies have been maneuvering for many years for the world war with Russia, they yell that it is to protect the, quote, freedom and democracy as they extort the wealth of both the perceived victim and aggressor. We need to wake up to this apocalyptic tactics of the Western oligarchs and resist all their attempts to impose their destructive objectives on us. What we largely talked about behind the woodshed, and all the ways they've done it, and the ingrained metastasized cancer that's been established by these folks in order to effect that end. Russia calls on BRICS to ditch dollar. Now, this is an ongoing story, but again, you read within the stories that this moving on, you're watching the future they want, the technocratic connected token citizenship coming on, and it's interesting. Well, I find it interesting where it's coming through and how to see it. We can see it almost each week now. But we didn't see it so well before. We could discuss certain things, but this is really laying it out. They say the words. The blocks, like austerity in Germany. Now, it's coming out. That's what you're doing. The Netherlands, it's coming out. That's what they're putting onto you. And we could read those same words through different euphemisms in Agenda 2030. And here we have it. The bloc's member states should further strengthen economic ties, according to the foreign minister from Russia. The sustainable development of financial relations and settlements within the BRICS organization is very important for all member states, Russian Finance Minister Anton Siluyanov has said. Russia and its trade partners among developing nations, including fellow BRICS members, have started to switch to alternative currencies in mutual trade after sanctions effectively cut Moscow off from the Western financial system. A growing number of the nations are turning to national currency settlements in trade, because they found the United States politicized the dollar, and they found out those people, when you get subject to that, you're a debtor, you're going to be controlled. And they said, well, we're going to cut ourselves from this as best we can. The only thing they have is their own currency. Like, you know, we can do that ourselves, I guess, have paper currency. It's not legal tender, but we can agree to use it. But here we have, so we see they are switching here to the basket of currencies. Remember, I've talked about this. Talking about it again, as they say they're going to ditch the dollar, they're moving into that basket of currencies, the local national currencies, which I said would include the gold. It's a base foundation. It's not the only thing. It's just a little bit to make it look good, and to bring those emerging, developing countries to parity with the existing global beast financial system. Talked about this for weeks. They're now coming on, and we're focusing this, what this guy is saying, when you understand the underside of this. In fact, here some of these nations like Ethiopia, the one I read last week, will be more deeply indebted in this peace system. And they're going to get more. They're going to go after more of it. And this is a BRICS member, this Ethiopia, or soon to be, and they're not going to avoid that. Nobody's saying, oh, if you deal with the West, you're going to be kicked out. These currencies in the basket, so-called, will allow the use of the long-ago planned SDR, the special drawing right, and as you are clearly hearing now, connected to the sustainable development and the feckless non-governmental United Nations change agent, and I spoke here previously on ad infinitum here, and that none here will be left behind. None will be left behind on this. They all will be brought into this satanic beast system, as we've heard. I've heard it for years, and here it is. Therefore, here we have again the statement and reaffirmation the sustainable development of financial relations of settlements in the BRICS platform is important to us. Sustainable development and financial relations. It has to go through the UN. There's no separation from the beast system we've heard about in anticipation of the fulfilling of what we've heard, that no man might buy or sell, save he have the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. That we read out of Revelation 13:17, and I think that includes women. No man might sell. You think the women escape? I don't think so. So everyone's going to be involved, as well as others here that are confused. So I'll ask my listener again, what's in your digital wallet? And are you listening carefully here? Have you got the beast's number? What saves you? It's on the horizon, it seems. And to confirm here, the continuing indebtedness. No rights here in an indebted system. The indebtedness of the global financial system beast. In the notice to us of the same week, record debt levels threatens developing countries, says the World Bank. These same BRICS nations trying to be brought to parity, they're being reported on by the World Bank, not the IMF. This is the other usurper. This is the one with the toolkits to take down any nation. Every subject matter, they have a toolkit to take down in a nation. Fascinating. High interest rates are reportedly siphoning money away from the spending and health and education and other critical needs. These are the warm and fuzzy people. Modernization Act for health and education and critical needs. No, they're taking it away. Developing nations spent $443 billion to service their external public and publicly guaranteed debt in 2022 amid the biggest surge in global interest rates in the decades, according to the latest World Bank report. The research found that these increases shifted scarce resources away from critical needs such as health, education, and environment. Debt service payments, both principal and interest, jumped by 5% over the previous year for all developing countries. Report further showed it further indicated that 75 countries eligible to borrow from the World Bank's International Development Association, which supports the poorest countries, paid a record $89 billion in debt servicing costs in 2022. Over the past decade, interest payments of these countries were quadrupled to an all-time high of $23 billion in the last year, according to the report. Overall debt servicing costs of the 24 poorest countries are expected to balloon to in 2023 to 2024 as much as 39%. And as I said, like a payday loan is a loan shark. Nothing on the usury, using, racketeering of the world, the IMF, World Bank, and the essential U.S. Treasury or the global system, financial system, which some would say is a Zionist control. There's nothing on this system. These payday loan companies are cheap. However, this is what they do to countries. This is what's going on. Now, I can tell you what's not in the public wallet here. We talk about what's going on in the theft of the essentially public and private theft. What's not in the public wallet would be the stolen big pharma globally. Remember the early story where they're having to pay to 2027. That's going right out of their country's wallets with the consent and complicit regimes operating under color of lawful government that didn't do a law one to protect any of their people. And it was all written globally, written down everywhere. It's disgraceful at one end, and just fascinating. Like it's almost like an open joke. And people are suffering around the world. The worst of it is happening in Gaza, and the worst that were happening right before, the Yemenis are helping to fight. The only ones in the world actually taking it to those that misbehave. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 556. I hope I help you analyze the world a little bit, put it in perspective for you, look at what's happening around your world. It's pretty much going to be the same. It looks a little different, not over in those other places, but hopefully you can do something with this information and become active in defending yourself, if nothing more. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips for Nature Willing.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, Journey with Purpose.
Up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.